A young man works all day in the hot desert sun, wishing to make something of himself and end the curse on his family.
Surrounded by a cast of colorful characters, CGI creatures, and jumping back and forth between historical timelines, this week, we're not talking about Star Wars. We're talking about the 2003 family classic, Holes.
How Star Wars!
Well, hello there, Mike.
Hi, Josiah, and hi to all of you listening at home,
hello.
In your car, on your bike, at work, or in the shower.
I hope many things. I hope you're listening to this on your bike, but in a safe way.
I hope you listen to this while you're on your bike in your shower.
Ooh, a bike shower. I like that idea. That's kind of fun. You could have a little bit of a get sweaty, but get clean at the same time.
How else are you going to clean your bike?
If not in the shower?
And welcome, and this is How Star Wars Is It, and it's the only podcast.
Mm-hmm. This is the only podcast. And what we do here is we rate things on a scale of 1 to 10, not of how good or bad they are, but of how Star Wars they are.
Right.
Yeah, and so what does that mean? Well, we take everything Star Wars, we put it all into a big pot, we set that pot to simmer, and then that's the 10 out of 10 chili of Star Wars. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
The type of chili you might eat at Camp Green Lake.
Oh, yeah. Whenever they come over the loudspeaker, they're like, garbanzo beans, yeah. Pinto beans, green beans. It's just a bunch of different kind of beans that don't necessarily go together.
No.
Kind of nasty.
Yeah.
But we're talking about the movie Holes this week, baby.
We are talking about Holes. Now, did you read Holes as a kid?
I did, and I loved it.
I will say this came up last week on the episode entitled Nothing, because it was in the game a series of seemingly unrelated clues that all equated to the lack of or the vacancy of, and one whole thing was the if only poem from Holes.
Right.
The Woodpecker side, and then that made me be like, I want to watch that. And Caitlin grew up watching it like all the damn time.
Really? That's funny.
Yeah, it was one of their like car movies.
Oh yeah, it was like a car movie. Yeah. Yeah.
And so we watched it and we're like, damn, this movie rips.
It rules, dude.
And it was written by the book writer.
That is crazy. Lewis Sacher.
Yeah.
Sacher. I love, you know what else he wrote that I loved?
The Wayside School books?
Yes. Yeah. Those books were so funny.
Yeah, really funny.
Like,
I still think about a joke from those books today. Because it's kind of a designer joke.
Yes.
You know, the school was supposed to be like 30 rooms, one story high, but they had the drawings turned sideways, so they built it one room, 30 stories high.
Yes.
And one of the like jokes that I just always think about is, and remember, students, like it's all about like stairway congestion because everyone's always on the stairs. Mm-hmm. And it was like, students, remember to keep out of everybody's way. When you're going up the stairs, stay to your right. And when you're going down the stairs, stay to your left, which is effectively the same lane.
The same, yes. Because the principal was stupid.
Yes.
I love those books. The one that I remember, too, is that there was no... What floor did they skip?
Yeah,
was
it like the 13th floor? Maybe?
It might have been the 13th one because it was unlucky, but there was just like... They were like, oh,
it
there's
like
no
floor
there.
It literally didn't exist.
And it just didn't exist.
But there's like, a book where it does.
Well,
like,
there's a chapter about...
Yes.
About... Those books were insane because like literally there's like a chapter in which... They explore the idea of a place not existing.
Yeah, like and a quantum
like,
place.
Yes, it's like a freaking Schrodinger's cat. Like it doesn't exist at all.
Yeah,
and there's some one of the jokes in those books that I think of all the time. I don't know why this one stands out to me, but like there was a kid that was was the fastest drawer, the fastest artist, and like they could draw like that was their claim to fame was they were like, I can draw like 6 cats in 30 seconds, and everyone would be like, oh my god, that's so incredible.
I kind of
and then their
that.
teacher who was really well-intentioned at that time. Mm-hmm. I think it was one of the times they had a good teacher, because one of the big things was that, like, they, in one of the books, is that they had, like, a lot of bad teachers in a row.
Yeah.
Or, like, evil teachers, or, like, weird teachers with weird, strange powers and stuff.
Right.
But this was one of the good teachers, and she was like, well, have you thought about taking more time with your drawings? Because the more time you take, the better the drawing will turn out. Mm-hmm. And so then the joke there was that she was like, oh, I never thought of it that way. And so the kid just does the same drawings, but really slow. And so it's like still just like stick drawings of cats, but really slow. And she was like, I really do think that my art was getting better. And I was like, that's so funny to me.
Yeah.
Is the idea of being like, well, I'm still going to draw the stick figure, but I'm just going to take my time.
Yeah. It's like misunderstanding the point.
It's like Amelia Bedelia, yes. You know, it's like, oh, you need this. I'm going to take you I'm going to take you literally and do the exact thing that you say.
Yeah.
Anyway, but we're talking about Holes, which was written by Lewis Sacker too. So like he wrote all these Wayside School books, and then before Holes, and then Holes was kind of, I feel like, maybe not his like debut into a more like narrative style story, but it was kind of his most popular one for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And it was more of like a, because like the Wayside School books were more like, I don't know, not essays, but like little stories,
little like vignettes, yeah,
vignettes of just funny vignettes, like. And then Holes is like a straightforward narrative, not straightforward, but a narrative that's like, you know, an actual, that you can make a movie out,
right,
of, dadgummit. And it's so cool that you wrote the screenplay, because this movie, like, is so tight.
Yeah. Like, it's sort of unbelievable.
Yeah. I was like, this is a really, really, like, I've always said
honestly,
that,
you know what it kind of reminds me of is Watchmen.
Interesting.
Like, the intersecting timelines that all, yeah, sort of have to do with one another. Not like, exactly, but...
Sure. What I was going to say was, I always say that, like, one of the best... Well, the traditional wisdom of, like, what's one of the best, like, novel-to-screen adaptations is, like, To Kill a Mockingbird is a really good, mm-hmm, one, right? Like, it does its job very well. I think I'm going to, like, knock that down a peg and say, maybe freaking Holes, dude.
Yeah.
Holes might be the best novel-to-screen adaptation.
Yeah.
Partly because they had the actual guy who wrote the screenplay.
Yeah.
But this movie is so tight. Like, everything that comes up in this movie...
has a payoff.
Every brick,
yes,
that goes up, yes, falls down. Everything has a payoff.
And they're fun. Like, it doesn't feel like that J.K. Rowling thing of like, oh, well, she introduced a new type of magic in the first 200 pages, which means somewhere in the last 200,
right,
that's going to be something.
No, it doesn't feel prescriptive. It feels joyful when you get to like... experience the resolution of, yeah, that story, of any,
honestly,
of these storylines.
This is annoying to say, but it kind of feels like a perfect Herald, like improv.
No, you're right.
Improv form, because,
right,
there are these like three timelines, and then,
yes,
there's all these details, whether they're objects or characters or creatures. You know, like there's the onions and there's the lizards, and then, mm-hmm, you find out that the onions keep the lizards away in the past, and then you see that true in the future,
yeah,
that the onion juice keeps the lizards from attacking. Like, just pick any little micro detail and it pays off, to say nothing of the fact that the onions then are also an ingredient in the sweet feet mixture,
yes,
which, like, even that, like, okay, Stanley Yelnats' dad is trying to make a mixture that keeps feet, like, it's like a foot deodorizer.
Yeah.
And
that's the
reason
he steals the shoes.
Stanley gets sent to Camp Green Lake is because he stole that guy's shoes, and then he becomes the spokesperson for the foot deodorizer. And
yeah,
he didn't steal the shoes. Zero stole the shoes, and Zero is the great, great, great whatever of Madame Zeroni, and,
yes,
Stanley is the great, great, great whatever of. It's just like, so I don't know how you write this story.
It's so tight. It's so tight. Like, the way that you described it as a Herald is so perfect, because you literally have, I mean, that's just an annoying improv guy thing for us to say, but,
yes,
we're going to say it.
Yeah.
But you do have three different beats,
right?
Because, right, you have the old timey, is it Latvia?
Latvia, and then like the old
the Latvia
West
story, which the Latvia story kind of begins and ends pretty early on.
Uh-huh.
You don't have many flashbacks there, but you do have flashbacks to Madame Zeroni a little bit.
Yes.
And then you have the old West one with Kissin'
Kate Barlow.
Kissing Kate. and Dooley Hill's character,
Sam.
And you've got that storyline, and you've got Stanley in the present day.
The guy who owns the whole lake, or whatever.
The whole town and lake, who is
the grandfather of the warden.
Sigourney Weaver's character.
Also, sorry to do another hello-tery really quick.
Hello-tery.
But first of all, I'm with her.
Yeah.
I'm
with Zapdos.
The scene where young Sigourney Weaver, like the little girl, is out digging, and the guy is her grandfather, and I was like, wait a second, he would have to be so old. And then he like took off his hat and he looked like fucking Gollum.
Yeah, he
and
looked
I was like,
ancient.
Oh, he is really old.
Yeah, he is really old.
Yeah.
He was like 100 when she was like 10.
Yeah.
And it's the TikTok sound where she goes, I'm tired of this, Grandpa.
Yeah, that's too damn bad.
That's too damn bad. Which I was like, I forgot that was from Holes. Yeah. Which of course it's from Holes, because he says you have to keep digging.
Yeah. But yeah, so there's the Latvia story, which is like Stanley Yelnats's like great-great-great-grandfather has to win the heart of a maiden fair by,
Carrying
he takes the advice of Madame Zeroni, who tells him he has to take a skinny pig up the mountain every day and have it drink from the water so it can get big and strong. And then on the last day, he has to take Madame Zeroni up the mountain so that I can get strong.
It's like when she says the for all eternity.
Forever,
the way she says,
for always and eternity.
The way she says eternity. Like, I didn't realize that was stuck in my brain.
Yes.
Until I watched it today and heard her say eternity.
Yeah.
And I was like, I remember that inflection.
Caitlin will say that sometimes.
Saying that.
Like that again, they grew up watching it all the time, but she'll just sort of say, like, for always and eternity.
Eternity. Yeah, it's Eartha Kitt too. This cast is stacked.
It's sort of crazy. This movie is like a family kids movie. It's Disney,
yes.
So it's like really well put together.
Right. It's like, it's not like they didn't have money behind it.
No.
But once again, okay, like here you go. Tell me what you think the budget was. I got to pull up on don't look on Wikipedia.
It wouldn't have been 100 million. It would have been like 50.
Even less. 17 million.
Really?
And you've got Sigourney Weaver in here.
Yeah.
And you're only paying 17 million for this whole movie?
So, obviously, 2003, visual effects were a different story than they are now. But there were some yellow spotted lizard scenes that I was like, well, that could have just been a model or a real lizard. Because there are scenes where they have real lizards.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Like the yellow spotted lizards are like half the time CGI or maybe even more. I don't know.
And usually when they are, it's because they're doing something impossible.
Like running and jumping at you.
But they the thing that I've really become attuned to lately is the black value. I think we've talked about this before, but
if
something else
have,
in the scene is making a shadow that is like effectively the color black in that photography, essentially,
About this with like the
then
with
the shadow, the thing that the fake thing is creating needs to be the same color.
Yeah, we talked about that with like the CGI in the original trilogy that's put in after the fact.
Yeah.
Because there's certain like banthas or whatever that look a little off.
Yeah.
Or like, stormtroopers on top of, whatever that look a little off.
Yeah.
Yeah. Some of the effects are like very 2003, but I don't mind it because it fits into the movie so well.
Yeah, yeah.
That doesn't really take you out of it.
No, they're like few and far between.
Yeah. But this movie is so tight. The script is so tight. The stories lines all mesh together so well.
Yeah.
It's super fun. So you've got the Latvia, Madame Zeroni stuff. Then you have like the Old West stuff with
where
Sam.
There
was a lake with Sam and the Kate,
Catherine,
who becomes
Miss Catherine.
Who becomes an outlaw after they are seen kissing and the town lynches Sam.
Yes.
Which is like, this movie like does not pull punches.
Dude, that was the thing I was like really aware of this watch. It is inherently a movie about incarceration.
Yeah.
Of children, and then you layer on things like being wrongfully accused,
and race.
The sort of like labor, like forced free labor,
mm-hmm.
and then like
even,
the race of it all, like all the,
even
like,
amongst Even amongst the kids, there's some racial dynamics and elements, right?
And then there's also kids kind of very clearly exhibiting disabilities and or just like mental health issues.
Totally.
And that they were just incarcerated instead of dealing with them. And then all the old timey stuff, there's like, you know, lynching and race relation things in terms of like the 1800s, like the 1890s or 1880s, that I was like, oh my God, this movie is like saying so much.
It's saying so much. It's not messing around. It doesn't pull its punches. Zero is just a homeless kid that they kidnapped off the street to go to a work camp.
Yes.
Which probably is like, for juvenile detention centers, and like also just like this movie is basically being like, way before people were talking about it, at least in the mainstream, the school to prison pipeline, basically.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, because like these are and like there's a lot of kids of color that are like non-white kids that are in this program, and even in like amongst Stanley's like cohort or whatever they like whatever they call it,
the cabin or whatever,
detent. Like most of them are not white, and there's like racial dynamics there, and that is just like the sad state of affairs in like the modern era. Even is that like, you know, I love Run the Jewels. It's one of my favorite like rap groups and just like music artists in general.
Mm-hmm.
But like Killer Mike has this great, he's one half of Run the Jewels.
Right.
But he has this great line where he's like, let me look it up so I can like actually quote it correctly. So a song called Walking in the Snow, which is a great, really effective song. And yeah, the line goes like this. The way I see it, you're probably freest from the ages 1 to 4. Around the age of 5, you're shipped away for your body to be stored. They promise education, but really they give you tests and scores. And they predict in prison population by who's scoring the lowest. And usually the lowest score is the poorest, and they look like me. And I'm like, that's fucking real, right?
Yeah.
He's just literally in those 5 lines being like, this is the school to prison pipeline.
Yes.
This is what it looks like. It's kids of color who are poor and undereducated, because all we have are standardized tests, and that doesn't tell you anything about what a kid's aptitude is.
Yeah, totally.
And this movie is basically like being like, here it is. Yep. This is what our system is doing. It's failing children.
Yeah. They are actively trying to keep a kid from learning to read.
Yes.
Like,
I was funny. So like, once again, this movie is stacked. The cast is stacked. You got John Voight.
Yeah.
You got
Tim Blake Nelson.
Tim Blake Nelson, character actor extraordinaire.
Yeah.
Sigourney Weaver, Shia LaBeouf whenever he's a little kid, Patricia Arquette.
Henry Winkler!
Like, it's so stacked. But then, like, the one I want to talk about is Tim Blake Nelson's character, Dr. Pendanski.
Yeah.
Because I remember, like, at the beginning of the movie, I was like, this might be the worst doctor I've ever seen. And then it wasn't until the end that I remembered, oh, he's not a real doctor.
Because
they shout out at the end that he's not a real doctor.
Right.
And I was like, thank God. Because otherwise I'm like, what is this man's credentials?
Yeah.
But they don't have any. That's the whole thing. This whole thing's a scam. It's all being run. So folks, if you don't remember Holes, or if you've never read it or seen it, basically we have these different timelines. There's a family curse on the Yelnats family.
And the primary timeline that's probably 2/3 of everything is Stanley Yelnats the 4th being sent to a juvenile detention camp called Camp Green Lake, where he has to dig a hole 5 feet wide and 5 feet deep every day.
That's why it's called Holes. It's
to build character.
To build character. But really what you kind of are like hinting at early on is that there's something deeper going on. And what you find out by the end is that essentially Sigourney Weaver's character, everyone's a descendant of somebody.
Yes.
And everything is connected. So Sigourney Weaver is the descendant of
Harold-y.
It's very Harold-y.
Like,
Sigourney Weaver is the descendant of the guy who used to own the town, who is looking for the treasure that Kate Barlow buried, which she stole from Stanley. One of the treasures, parts of it, she stole from Stanley Yelnats's.
The first. Yeah.
Who was the descendant of the guy from Latvia who did not carry Madame Zeroni up the mountain.
Who cursed his whole family, yes.
And so...
And Madame Madame Zeroni?
Knee, and then everything comes together and everything gets resolved and it's all tied up in a perfect little bow
because Stanley gets sent to camp for stealing shoes, but he didn't steal them. They just hit him on the head one day. You find out the person who did steal them is another kid who's imprisoned there named Zero, which you then later find out is a nickname for Hector Zeroni.
Who
is a descendant of Madame Zeroni.
Mm-hmm. And then you once they both run away from camp, which they do, Stanley and Zero do, they climb this mountain. Stanley carries Zero up the mountain. Mm-hmm. He's fulfilling the promise.
He has him drink the water.
He had him drink the water. He brings him back to life. He fulfills the promise that his great-great-great-whatever grandfather made to Madame Zeroni. And then the curse is broken, and everything is fine. It's so cool because it's like literally saying, like, no, there is a curse.
Yeah.
There is a family curse. And it's kind of saying something about, like, generational trauma,
yeah.
too.
Yeah.
Like, inherited trauma that you inherit from your...
Totally.
Your parents, your grandparents, or these quote-unquote family curses that aren't, like, real curses sometimes, but are, like, problems that you have to
yeah,
deal with.
Sure.
You know, like, I'm thinking of, like, you know, ones that everyone has to deal with a lot of all the time. Things like rage or alcoholism mm-hmm. or just, like... not communicating like
right.
you should, you know, like something can be as simple as that. And it's kind of talking about that too. It's like, there are these generational curses, and in order to break them, you sometimes have to go through something extraordinary and like push yourself to limits and like go out of your way to help other people.
Yeah.
And like, and then that will break this curse. And all of a sudden everything starts going right.
This is
it's
a
so
really
cool.
good point. Even the fact that he's the fourth, like, he literally has to carry the name of this whole family line.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's doomed to be a Yelnats. He's doomed
yeah.
to be a Stanley Yelnats because the last four generations all were.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's all right. It's like all right there in the text. It's so clever and so satisfying.
Here's
the way it all
wraps
up. Here's
another little detail that has threads everywhere. Sam, Dulé Hill's character, gets these onions that are so sweet they eat them like apples. And in fact, I bet you from a props and set
they were
standpoint,
apples.
They were apples dressed up to look like onions. But
yes.
He would go up and fetch these wild onions and sell them in town, and he would trade them for spiced peaches in a jar from Miss mm-hmm. Catherine, the school teacher. And he would get up and down the mountain and get all around town to get these onions. Using his horse or donkey, Mary Lou.
Mary Lou, yeah.
Mary Lou would pull his little cart.
Which, I can't stop thinking about how that Mary Lou must look in a bikini.
Yeah, hilarious, really cute.
So silly.
But so then, when he finds out that the town is gonna fucking get him, he goes out into the lake, the titular, not titular because it's called Holes, but Camp Green Lake, it used to be a Green Lake. He got in his boat, which was named the Mary Lou,
mm-hmm.
and he packed up a bunch of peaches and onions, or peaches, mm-hmm. I suppose, is all it was, because mm-hmm. he had just gotten them from Miss Catherine and was, like, rowing out of town when they killed him. Lake dries up. There is now an overturned little wooden boat full of peaches sitting at the bottom of a dry lake, aka out in the middle of nowhere in the desert, for these boys to stumble upon and subside
and
on peaches.
Yes, keep them alive. Like,
yes.
Shelter of the boat and the 100-year-old peaches.
Yes, yeah.
Which I love. I love that kind of detail, too, because first off, Zero calls him Sploosh, which is funny, because in 2003, Sploosh didn't have a meaning,
uh-huh.
but then, like, I think Archer popularized Sploosh as meaning,
like
a female
getting
orgasm.
Wet.
Yeah. And so it's funny to call him Sploosh now, but by the time, it was entirely innocent. But, he says later in the movie, he's like, I think the Sploosh is getting to me, and I was like, these guys are drunk!
Yeah.
They're drunk on fermented peaches.
Totally.
And that's the only way they're able to climb this mountain
yeah.
is that they're fucking high on fermented
yeah.
peaches.
They have no inhibitions.
No, they're like, let's just go climb this mountain, guys.
We could. You know, like, this is stupid. This is like annoying fans of the 21st century type of sensibility I'm about to exhibit, but I'm going to anyway. Wasn't there a less steep route they could have taken up the mountain?
No!
They, like, climbed a vertical cliff face like the beginning of Mission Impossible 2.
Yeah, they really do. They're like free, like free... What's that? Oh,
Free Solo?
Anyway, yeah, Free Solo, thank
yeah.
you.
Free Solo, a Star Wars story?
Free Solo, a Star Wars story. Yeah, they climb... Well, it is God's thumb.
Mm-hmm.
So it is definitely a part of it that is, like,
yes,
vertical.
Yes, but look at what's going down your arm there. A gentle slope.
What are you talking about? I don't know what you're talking about. That had to go straight up.
But yeah, so Miss Catherine, the school teacher, everyone in town is bad and awful. And then, of course, they kill the man she loves. And they kill his fucking donkey.
Which turns her into an outlaw.
And then
because
she's
like
fully
fuck all
goes
this.
Postal.
Yeah. Which I love. What a cool character arc for her to be like, oh, you're all evil racists that killed the man I love. Well, I'm just going to kill you all now and take all your money. And I'm like, hell yeah.
And she
I'm with her.
Kisses men she kills.
Yeah.
With
which
like
is like
kiss lipstick.
With kiss lipstick.
And then steals
nice
their
little,
gold.
Steals their gold, which like, hey, it's a living.
And she keeps it all in a treasure chest that was the traveling chest of Stanley Yelnats the First, and it even has his initials carved into it.
Because she stole from him as well.
So that when it finally gets dug up and the warden is like, this is mine, it's on my property, Zero is like, no, it's not. It's Stanley's. It has his name on it. And they're all like, that can't be.
They're like, that literally can't be true.
Yeah.
It's so great because everything in this movie, it's funny because like everything in this movie could feel like a coincidence.
Yes.
But it doesn't. It all feels very much like it's fate.
Fate
and, that's
and destiny and family like, and redemption and Darth Vader is your father.
Yes. Stanley says at one point, like something about fate or destiny when he's talking to Zero.
Yeah.
And like that's another theme of this movie is like there are things in life that are like bigger than coincidence or bigger than just like whatever this like, you know, story you're telling is. And it's these big fate and destiny things.
I love this kind of world. In fact, I meant to say this. You tune in later this week, listeners, to the Patreon if you're a supporter of our show on patreon.com/howstarwars is it? Because in this week's bonus episode, at least one of the many topics we sort of delve into was is the PS5 game Spider-Man 2, but the Spider-Man games in general on PlayStation have their own special little New York City.
Yes.
Where like everyone kind of wants the best for everyone.
Yeah, it's just a beautiful
or, like,
New York
hey
City.
Hey Arnold's another example where like it has this like singular personality.
Yes, totally.
And this is another one where it's like this is like you said, like everything that happens is coincidence, but it's all fate. And like a complaint I have with a lot of things is, oh, well, everyone doesn't have to be related. Talk about Star Wars. Like, why does everyone have to be related and it's all like a family lineage thing? Which there's some Star Wars points for this story. But like in this, the reason that can be frustrating in Star Wars is Star Wars goes out of its way to show you how gigantic the galaxy is.
Mm-hmm.
And yet there's only like six families. And like this is like, no, it's this little world. Even like the star baseball player, essentially like the A-Rod of this world, is a fictional character who Stanley loves, and it was his shoes that he donated to the homeless shelter where he used to live. And like it's just all so teeny tiny in a way that is so satisfying. I'm trying to think of any other stories that I've come in contact with lately or, you know, not lately that like have this kind of smallness.
There is a smallness to it, but it's like a very satisfying smallness because it is its own little interconnected relationship world.
Yeah.
Where because like Star Wars wishes it could do something like this with satisfying payoffs with like relations between families. But you're right because the world in Holes is like there's this small town in Texas and everything in this story revolves around things that happened here.
Yeah.
And then that is what it is. And then in Star Wars, you're right, there's this huge universe, but it's like, but we're going to keep the action limited to these like three families. And also the problem with Star Wars is its themes contradict its setting.
Yeah.
At least in the sequel trilogy. And to an extent, the prequels, because the themes set up in the original trilogy is sort of this like, well, a farm boy from nowhere can be a hero because guess what? He's actually the son of the most evil man in the world, in the galaxy, and he has to save the entire galaxy by being a hero. And it can be a nobody from Nowheresville. Mm-hmm. And then, like, you know, there's other themes of, like, a scruffy nerf herder, a ruffian, can become a hero as well if you know, looks into himself and finds his true nature. And then the supposed like damsel in distress will find her steely resolve and become a leader of men, all that stuff. And then, like, you know, in the prequels, it's like, well, there's destiny, I guess, and fate, and there's no getting rid of it, which is like kind of goes against.
And at the same time as those big philosophical things, there's also like, we are an army of priest cops, and can't be a priest cop unless you have a certain type of blood.
Yes.
So it's like, well, which is it? Is it fate and destiny, or is it like math?
Yeah, and then in the sequel trilogy, it gets even worse. Of like, you know, like J.J. Abrams like no budding all everything that was cool about Last Jedi, mm-hmm. and basically being like, no, it's just these four families, and that's it, and that's mm-hmm. all that matters in the universe. And so I think maybe I'm onto something here, why recent Star Wars has felt less exciting, and I think it is because in part. The themes do feel at odds with the world they have created.
That's interesting. I like, you know what that I mean? Take. Yeah, like
that might be like verbalizing something that we've talked about a lot, but specifying specifically what it is about it.
Yeah.
Because the whole point of Star Wars originally felt like it was like in this grand universe of crazy magic and all sorts of stuff, you could be a hero.
Right.
You know,
and a really good way of telling a story at such a grand scale is to focus on the characters. You have to.
Yeah.
And if the main bad guy and the main good guy are actually from the same family, that just raises the stakes to such an emotional height that, like,
totally,
you couldn't achieve by just being like, the main good guy wants the opposite of what the main bad guy wants. But
right.
Then, to your point, they succeeded with that storytelling device in 1980, effectively. Mm-hmm, I'm not even including Return of the Jedi, but let's even include Return of the Jedi and say they succeeded in that storytelling effort in 1983. You can't just like repeat that. So in the prequels, he's just like, I'll just do the grand scale thing, but not really do like the investment in the characters.
Yes,
like
I was going to say, without the focus on the characters.
He does the show don't tell thing. Like, he is still like talking about the characters, but we don't care as much. And we know how it go. You know, like, we know the result. So, like,
it's like, okay, you know what I wonder? This is like kind of going off on a little bit of a, it's like talking a little bit of a tangent, but not really. I wonder if J.J. Abrams had gotten to make these movies earlier in his career.
Hmm.
If we would have seen something a little more satisfying.
Mm.
Because I think that, first off, rich people are fucking out of touch.
That's true.
Celebrities are incredibly out of touch with what people like and what people want to see. And I think that
Mission Impossible 3 was his first feature.
That's what I'm saying, dude.
Yeah.
I'm saying Mission Impossible 3, if we had a Star Wars with the sensibility of Mission Impossible 3.
He was like, I don't know what to do with this action superhero from Mission Impossible 2 or the like snarky spy guy from 1996. Like, this is the 2000s. I don't know what to do with him. I may as well make him a guy with a life, and then we focus on him being a guy with a life who is also a spy.
Exactly. And like, because he was a superstar director when he made Force Awakens and Rise of Skywalker, I wonder if that's why we get the less satisfying, you had to be a part of this.
It's more
royalty.
Of the first trilogy.
It's just more the first trilogy. Yeah. It's like you have to be a part of these few royal families,
right,
or these like bloodline lineages in order to be successful.
Honestly,
like,
I don't see how you could have done anything other than the choice Rian Johnson made of like, no, definitively, if we are going to tell a new fucking story for once, the person can't just be Luke Skywalker.
Yes, I know.
Or rather, has to be Luke Skywalker the way we are first introduced to him, which is a nobody.
Yeah.
And then we learn all this stuff. We learn five more movies after the time we think Luke is a nobody. We see five more movies that say, like, no, he's actually somebody. He's somebody very important. He's
very
like Jesus almost. And then Johnson is like, okay, we need to make a new Jesus that isn't explainable.
Yes.
Like, if we're going to go somewhere else, we need this to go somewhere else.
We need to go somewhere else. I mean, one of the biggest, like, not to get religious in here, but one of the biggest, like benefits and, like, sort of, like, drawing points of Jesus is that he literally was a nobody. Like, the only thing about him was that he was the Son of God.
Yeah.
And that's the big deal. But then, like, if you wanted to find how he was related to, royalty, you have to go back so many generations to trace him back to King David. That's mm-hmm. part of the prophecies or whatever, is that Mary's family came from King David or whatever. And but you have to go really, really far back to find that. And so, like, in order to find something exciting about a modern character, I go back to this argument I had with my friend about Last Jedi. Mm-hmm. I'm getting so much mileage out of that argument. But, like, one of the things he, you know, argued with me about was, like, the portrayal of Luke in Last Jedi and how it was, like, not consistent with his character in the rest of the series.
Yeah.
And I was like, no, it was absolutely... I was like, first off, we don't see Luke in Force Awakens, so... everything that we know about him is from Last Jedi.
Yeah.
As an adult, as a man. So, like, it is consistent with what we know about him because it's literally the only evidence we have of who he is at this point in his right. life. And I think it's also another great choice from Rian Johnson. It's a creative choice, is to have a man who is different than he was when he was a kid.
Yeah.
You know, yes. like he grew and changed and also went through trauma.
Yeah.
Like, that changes you. And so, like, I don't know. Yeah, I think there's a lot of cool choices that they make in that movie that gets torn away, obviously. But I wonder, yeah, I don't know. This is something we maybe need to come back to occasionally about the themes and the world not being like in yes, tandem like, with each other.
Useful to one another.
Because one thing about Holes is the themes in the world are like interconnected, yes. untangleable from each other.
Yes. In fact, like, you know, we in the kind of great... like white reckoning of 2020 of yeah, like everyone yeah. started reading and everything, you know,
yeah.
like that was when I was first exposed to the idea that like police came out of like,
yeah, slave, like slave hunting, like, yes. you know,
and this
going out and finding freed slaves or like runaway slaves,
like, you know, slavery's straight line that you can draw to free labor in incarcerated, you know,
yeah,
like
in prisons. Yeah, totally.
Is it the 13th Amendment that basically says yes. slavery is okay if it's in prison?
Yes.
So like this movie and book, this story is like directly showing mob mentality, lynch mob of the late 1800s, and then like incarcerated children.
Yeah.
In like, if you blink, it goes from one scene to the next. It's like...
It's connecting the dots. Yes. Which like no one did for 20 more years.
When I was in like fourth grade reading this book, I probably, if I were to read this book today, would just take the words at face value because I'm not a good reader. But sure. like, I can sure. at least watch a movie.
yeah. And, yeah, totally. Yeah. This draws a straight line of the themes between totally. Like, of... like race relations, incarceration. This movie has so much depth to it for being a 2003 family movie.
Yes.
Starring Shia LaBeouf.
Yeah. Introducing Shia LaBeouf was his
interesting.
Credit.
Oh.
Which, of course, he was already on TV at that point.
I was
going to
say, yeah,
like,
he already had Even Stevens under his belt.
Yeah, but
so.
In terms of like the film convention right. of saying and introducing Lindsay Lohan as Hallie right. and Annie or whatever.
Totally. Well, we got to get to the game because we have a really important
oh, yes,
game
we do.
To play. But
I think to kick off the second act of the show, I have a special thing before we do the game.
Exciting. Okay, let's get to the break.
Okay.
Let's go.
Wee.
Hi, Jake.
Hey, Caitlin. We're the co-hosts of a little podcast called Gimme That D.
Did that get your attention?
It's a Disney Channel original movie breakdown podcast.
We are breaking down all of your favorite childhood movies that aired on the Disney Channel from 96 to 06, the golden age of cinema.
Adair. We are two F-list comedians with a lot of A-list comedian friends, and together we break down and celebrate these absolutely batshit crazy films.
So we're talking aloof parents.
Inexplicable plots.
Bowl cuts responsible for sexual awakenings the world over.
And we ask the hard-hitting journalistic questions like, what the fuck is this?
And could we have maybe taken a second pass at that script?
Oh, but we love them.
Oh, God, yes.
So listen to us wherever you get your podcasts.
To stay in the know of what movie we're covering each week and who our guest is, follow us on Instagram at GMTDpod.
Yeah, but for real, do it.
I have a special guest appearance to kick us off into the next segment.
Okay, I'm so excited.
Ready?
Where do I go?
In front of the mic.
I don't get to hear myself?
You can hear yourself.
Yeah, get out of here.
So here, let me think of how we're going to say, and we're back.
Hi, Josiah.
Hi, Caitlin.
Get closer.
This is unprecedented. I'm so excited.
Here, Mike, you can listen
okay.
to
I'm so excited for what's going to happen.
Oh, I've got a good and we're back.
Okay.
And we're sack-car.
Oh, good one.
And welcome back to the show, everyone. And before we go into the game, we have a special guest performance. Ladies and gentlemen, Caitlin.
The part that you always do.
Oh, okay. A-R-M-P-I to the T. What is that? You're smelling, dog? That's me. I don't take showers and I don't brush my teeth. That's all I do is dig holes, eat, and sleep. I also remembered the first one, too.
Oh, do that one.
Two shoes, two tokens in hand. I got no respect because I'm the new man. Got my shovel, shoes full of sand. Check out the hook. The name is Caveman.
Incredible. Do you have any more?
I think those are the only two like verses in the song. Mm. Everything
sure,
else,
sure.
Well, X-Ray has a verse, but I don't know that one.
Mm. I love that you did those because I remember hearing those when I first watched the movie. And also just in general, I meant to bring this up earlier. Mm-hmm. I thought these guys were the coolest guys I'd ever seen in my life.
Yeah.
When I watched this movie, I had a crush
on every single one of them.
I mean, like, I think there was some crushes involved for sure. I wanted to be them. I was like, mm-hmm. Every single one of them is the coolest motherfucker I've ever seen in my life. Even like Zigzag with his crazy hair.
He was my favorite.
I was like, that's who I want to be.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if Mike told you this, but mm-hmm. we had one of those minivans that had like a TV in it. Did you tell him this?
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Please tell us though.
The, like three movies.
Yeah.
Whatever.
So this was one of the three movies, but we watched it so much that we eventually started watching the version with the commentary, and it was like most of those boys like were doing the commentary, and so that is the version that we started watching as just like our let's watch Holes, but like we gotta watch it with the commentary on because it was just, they were just so funny. It was just like,
that's amazing,
those four like 14-year-old boys like just talking about a movie that they made, and we just thought it was so much funnier.
I mean, that sounds incredible. I would love to watch that.
Yeah. So that's why I know those two verses, because I watched that movie a lot.
Thank you so much for blessing us with that rendition.
Yeah, you're welcome.
I'm going to cut that out, and that's going to be the new theme song to the show.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
You guys won't get in trouble for that.
No.
No, I don't think so. Like, no one listens to this show.
Yeah, nobody knows that song.
No, that's true.
Except me.
Except Caitlin. Yeah.
You and Caveman and Armpit.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I'm going to go.
Yeah, okay. Thanks for saying that.
Thank you, Caitlin. Well, a very rare appearance from Caitlin.
A rare appearance.
Because we get, I yell at Charlie to come talk on the mic a lot. But yeah, Caitlin very rarely has been on the show.
When the credits started rolling, she just like immediately did it. I was like,
incredible. What episode? Caitlin did the Shark Tank episode.
Shark Tank and Rent.
Rent,
I think,
that's
were the
right.
two that she did. Oh, and then she and then, did like Harry then, Potter 5 and 6 or something, or 4 and 5.
4 and 5, which we never released.
And then we never released it because like J.K. Rowling of it all.
Yeah, that's like one of the only episodes we've recorded that we didn't release, which is funny. Slash the lost episodes, of course.
Is that sitting somewhere? Because we could take a week off.
Presumably it is sitting somewhere on my hard drive, but I don't know where. I wonder if it is. Let me look real fast. Well, thank you so much for that, Mike.
Of course.
I think we should stop doing the show now.
Yep.
Because that was funnier than anything we're going to say.
That can't be true because I have a Zapdos named Helotery. And I think we're about to see her again.
I think, if memory serves, we're about to see Helotery.
Now, do we start with me writing down a bunch of stats that I won't use?
Yes. Welcome to the Holes RPG. Because now, whenever Josiah makes a game, it's just going to be an RPG every time.
And I'm going to start doing what I did this time and just start requesting them because I want to keep this bizarre continuing story going. Especially since each week it will be themed around something very specific that doesn't really make sense for the same character to be experiencing.
So far in this story, which this is going to get harder and harder as we go on. But so far in this story, you've walked around Chicago. Northern Chicago, got lunch at the Olive Garden where there was some goblins.
That's right. Well, wait, and before that even, if we want to call it like a prequel of sorts or like non-canon perhaps, there was doing my taxes.
Oh, that's right.
Which I just did last weekend.
I need to do those. I keep forgetting. There was doing your taxes, yes, which there were goblins involved in that. We've also, okay. We also went to the grocery store at one point, and you shoplifted a bunch.
Yeah, so wait, it was...
I made you shoplift.
It was taxes, then groceries, then vacation, and now... That's right, I forgot. We need to write these down.
We do,
so
we
I
do.
Can, like, do a cut of all of them or something.
Let me see. We have the taxes RPG. That's right. Let me look up in my phone if I can see other ones that I've created, because I normally label them. Yeah, so the most recent, I think the ones that count for this story are, let's see, did taxes or groceries come first?
I think taxes did.
I think you're right. I think taxes came first, then grocery store RPG, then lunch RPG, then vacation RPG, and now... Holes RPG. Oh, yeah. No. There was a going to the gym RPG.
Oh, shit. That's right.
Do you remember that one?
Not really.
I remember
that, like, the counter had, like, Gatorade and, like, a kind bar, but then also, like, a sword.
Yeah, and there was also you could use your calories to buy things. And there was also a Master Ball for sale there, too. There's always a Master Ball.
Which, okay, hold on. By the way, is not ever something you can buy.
No. It's always a gift from somebody that you get in the game. You never actually can buy it.
Yeah.
So we have, we have the taxes RPG, taxes, grocery store, gym, lunch, vacation, and now holes.
So yeah, taxes, grocery store, gym were like the Hobbit.
Prequels.
It was like before we knew what the world was going to be. So not even necessarily prequels, but like...
they set like the vibe of
early novellas prior to the writing of a continuing saga.
Like they have like recurring themes, like goblins showing up, master balls being there, swords that you can buy.
Yeah.
Just the things in this world that are very consistent.
Uh-huh.
Okay. But we're at the Holes RPG, so what we're going to do is we got to roll for some stats. Now, these are going to be some classic RPG stats this time. So give me a roll for strength first. We're just going to roll a d20. We're going to do a flat d20. We're not going to do the 4d6 method from D&D. We're just going to do a flat d20 roll.
Okay, strength 17.
Whoa, you're very strong. Hold on, let me make some notes here. Strength. 17. Now roll for your dexterity, which is how fast or quick you are.
4.
Slow. Roll for your intelligence. We're going to combine intelligence and wisdom as to one kind of like mental stat, like, you know.
13.
Pretty solid. And then now, charisma. What's your ability to affect people?
16.
Not bad. Hey, this is pretty good. So, now, whenever you roll for, we are going to use the D&D modifier table. So for take a note of this, whenever you roll for strength with your 17, you get a +3.
Okay.
For your dexterity as a 4, you get a -3.
Oh, geez.
Intelligence at 13 is a +1. Charisma at 16 is also +3. So there you go.
Got it.
So +3, -3, +1, and +3.
And again, we're just going to forget about all these, right?
Yeah, you'll never use them. So here's the Holes RPG. Mike, you left. Oh, got to find what you left your vacation RPG with.
I was in the Maldives.
You were in the Maldives.
I wonder if I even have the piece of paper I was writing on.
Oh, gosh. Is it on my phone or is it on here? I can't remember. Sometimes I take these notes on my phone notes app.
Uh-huh.
I got it. At the end of lunch RPG, or at the end of vacation RPG, you had a Zapdos named Telotary, a rival named Butthole, and 1,500 gold. So, Mike, at the beginning of this RPG, God, we have like 10 minutes left of recording and after this entire game right now. Let's go. Let's make this fast. So, like at the beginning of this RPG, you're walking around with your 1500 gold and your master ball with Helodry inside. You're loving life. You're into the city of Chicago. You get hit in the head with a pair of shoes.
No.
And then you take him home to your dad, who was trying to find a cure for smelly feet. But you get caught by the cops. And you're shipped off to a camp for juvenile delinquents.
But I'm 33.
Yeah, it's weird that you're there. But it is for juvenile delinquents. And you're it is a camp where you have to dig holes every day. Mm. To build character. But you have a sneaking suspicion there might be something else going on here.
Mm-hmm.
So, day one, you are met with Mr. Sir, mm-hmm. also a character from the movie who's in this RPG.
Great name.
Dr. Pendansky, very funny name. And the mysterious warden who you haven't met yet. Now, you've got to... I got to say...
She sounds
normally,
hot.
Oh, bro? She's one of the most hot women you've ever seen. Not as hot as Mary Lou or whatever the name of the donkey was in a bikini. So you've got to dig a hole. So Mike, go ahead. You are going to use this stat first. Roll for strength and see how good you can dig this hole. It's a D20 roll for me, please.
17 plus 3.
Dang, that's a dirty 20.
Yeah.
So that's a dang good hole.
And it's a dirty hole.
It's a dirty hole. They say the first hole is the hardest, but you found it to be the opposite. This one was actually pretty easy.
Yeah.
Normally, you'd have like a
cadre
of like...
You're going to be sore in the morning, boys.
Oh, you're going to be sore in the morning. You'd have like a cadre of like colorful characters here, but really, there's actually only one other guy, and he walks up to you, and an exclamation point goes over his head.
Oh, no.
And you realize this is your... It's Butthole! Your rival! Now, it looks like he wants to Pokemon.
What if someone was like, they just watched the movie Holes or they read it and they were like, I wonder if there's any podcasts about holes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And this is their first time ever hearing this podcast. They're like, sorry, what's Butthole? And we're like, well, there weren't enough characters to write Butthole. What do you mean? This is a podcast. Right.
Right. Also, I don't even know if Butthole, like, that's seven characters.
Yeah, I'm sure it's probably plenty. Yeah.
It feels like...
It's no Feraligator.
Yeah.
Feraligator.
Feraligator. My God. Okay, so Butthole goes up to you and he says, I normally would battle you upon sight.
Mm-hmm.
But it looks like we're in the same boat out here digging holes.
Mm.
I have an Articuno. And Eradicate and a Lickitung. Which I need to write down so I can remember that.
Man, I gotta get a Lickitung. Just because I want one, and then, you know, if I run into Butthole, I can fight fire with fire, you know. It's not like a great matchup, but like the idea of two Lickitungs battling one another is
like,
just
ow,
great.
Ow. I have My Raticate does no dig. Mm-hmm. I'm going to have him dig holes for me, and I'm going to try to get out of here.
HMO3?
Yes,
I
HMO3.
I don't know which number it was.
it is an HM.
Yeah.
I used a precious move slot on this HM so he can learn dig.
Yeah.
My Articuno also knows fly. I also used an HM on a legendary. Is that smart? I don't know.
Yeah.
But I did do it. Now, are you in or are you out?
In to what? Sorry.
Try to escape.
Yes. Hey. The enemy of my enemy is my friend.
He puts his hand out for you to shake.
And I put out the wrong hand. Like, I put out my left hand and go, oh, sorry.
He looks at you like you're a fucking idiot.
Yeah.
And then he walks away and he goes, Raticate, use dig. And Raticate goes, into the ground, like this little circle, and digs into the ground.
These imaginary people in my head who are listening to the podcast for the first time because they just love holes are like, what? Where did the? Did I miss somewhere in the first half of this episode that Pokemon are involved? Do these guys think Pokemon are real?
Now, here's what we're gonna do. We're gonna take some a little inspiration from the going to the gym RPG because we are working out.
Okay.
So go ahead and roll a D100 and see how many calories you burned.
Okay. 26.
Great. You rolled. You burned 26 calories. Now, there is, I will say, a very similar system for... Red, stop barking. I'm recording a podcast. So there's a similar system for purchasing items here at this camp. And you use the calories you burn. Now, you do have 1,500 gold, but that gold is useless here.
Oh, shit.
At Camp Green Lake. I'm so sorry. And you walk into, after your first day of digging, you walk into the shop, and you see that there is...
Shop?
a goblin behind the counter.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it's a classic Hisui goblin. And now he looks at you and he goes... Hello, welcome to my shop. Do you want to purchase something here?
Yes, more than anything, I would like to purchase something. What do you
have?
Well,
let me tell you what we have. For 1,000 calories, we have a sword.
That's all you have?
For 1,000,000 calories, we have a master ball. This is standard across all goblin shops.
I see. Do you have anything to the tune of, like, 5 or 10 calories?
Oh, do you want a granola bar?
Perhaps.
We can have a granola bar for 10 calories. That'll give you +1 to your next dig roll.
The goblin is saying that?
Yeah, sorry, the goblin said that in real life. Yeah. It was weird.
I think that I've got to kind of go with that option, because I'm not anywhere near 1,000. And what am I going to do with a sword out here?
Kill someone. You
no,
never know.
I'm going to get 1 granola bar.
Okay, here you go. And he gives you a granola bar. Now you have a granola bar. If you eat it, you'll get a +1 on your next dig roll.
Okay.
It's day 2. Actually, wait. Roll a d20 for me. This is a random encounter. Bad luck. On your way back to your cabin, you see a yellow spotted lizard.
No.
Sure wish you had a sword right now, don't you?
Is it CGI or is it real?
It's real.
No! That means it's probably just a bearded dragon that they painted.
Yeah. Now, roll. This is another luck check. Roll a d20 to see if you ate onions in the last 24 hours.
7.
You did not. You do have Zapdos at your disposal. So, how would you like to proceed with this yellow spotted lizard?
Is there a way that I can just sort of skirt around it, or is it like really gonna be me or him?
Oh,
kind
dude,
of thing?
It's like looking at you, and it's like,
yeah. All right, well, Helodry, I choose you.
Helodry jumps out and is just going dun 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 dun. What move would you like Helodry to use on the yellow spotted lizard?
I don't remember the moves.
You've got drill peck, thunder shock, and agility.
I don't know that I want Helodry getting too close to this thing because he's poisonous.
Yeah, this thing can kill.
So I'm gonna keep my distance and go with thunder shock.
Great, thunder shock is 100% hit rate.
Yeah.
You're lucky this isn't a ground type. Because obviously yellow spotted lizards are poison types.
Ah, sure.
So it takes the 80, I think, damage and just immediately dies.
Okay.
Helodry wins this battle and gets a very small amount of XP.
Oh.
So keep track of that.
Yeah, wait. Did Helodry get any XP last time?
No, I didn't give her any. But this time, she gets a very small amount, and if she kills 100 yellow spotted lizards, she'll get to be level 76.
Okay, great.
Because right now, she's level 75.
Uh-huh.
All right, day 2, roll for your hole digging.
Okay.
And add a +1 to it.
Oh, that's the calories. Oh,
no,
that's the
roll to dig
strength.
The hole, how good you do.
19 plus 3.
Plus 1, that's a 23.
Oh, plus 1 to the dig. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So 23 total?
Yeah.
Wow, you're really good at digging holes. Butthole comes up to you and says, keep up the good work. You're a perfect distraction. I think I found a breach in their defenses. Uh-huh. We're going to get out of here. Roll for your calories that you burned.
42.
All right. Add that to your calories.
Oh, right. So wait, I had 26 and I used 10 to buy a granola bar.
16 plus 42. You have 58 calories.
Yeah.
All right. You head back to the shop. The same goblin is like, Hello, it's still 1,000 calories for a sword if I can interest you in a sword.
No. Do you have any... Do you have any other items in the, like, 5, 10, 20 range?
I can give you a Gatorade for 50.
What does that do?
Well, it gives you plus one to your dexterity rolls.
It's not like a cool drink that I can give to the guard so that he's distracted and I can walk through his little house.
Well, maybe. Maybe they'll come across a guard that says he's parched and he needs a lemonade in order to open up this gate.
And now, do I only need to give it to him for all guards in the world to also have a drink
well,
all of a sudden?
Maybe if you finally give this one guard one Gatorade and the rest of them will finally let you through the cordoned off areas. Maybe.
Okay, you know what, Goblin? You talk me into it. I'm going to buy a Gatorade.
Good. He gives you a Gatorade. Mark off 50 calories. Uh-huh. All right, it's day 3. Butthole comes to you and says, I found it, a breach in the defenses. Do you have a sword?
No, but Butthole, I wasn't even close.
You don't have a sword yet? He pulls out a sword. I got one yesterday.
Sorry, how many calories have you been burning out here?
None, because I've been making Raticate dig holes for me. I stole this sword.
You know, stealing is bad. That's what got us into this whole mess.
Well, listen, I know for a fact you've shoplifted before. I've listened to this podcast. There was a whole RPG where the shoplifting was a main component of
it. They sent me to this work camp to learn my lesson, and that lesson was that you shouldn't steal. So
okay, it looks like you've learned it.
I'm trying to turn over a new friggin' leaf here, Butthole.
The warden comes out and says, the warden herself comes out and says, sounds like you've learned your lesson, kid. Mm-hmm. You ready to get out of this camp?
Yes.
Show me you're a better person.
How the fuck could I do that?
Write me an essay. No. She says, well, if you ever hear anyone trying to escape, you just let me know.
Ah, yes, I will. And I haven't heard anything.
All right. She leaves. Butthole goes, wow, you could have turned me in, and you didn't. That you're a real stand-up guy. We might start having the relationship that rivals have in later Pokemon games, where they're more friends and less antagonists against each other.
Does one of them at least still say things like, smell you later, Gramps?
Oh, yeah, this one guy, he's always like, I'll meet you there and I'll fine you $1,000,000 if you don't make it on time. It's really sassy. And then sometimes they're really boring and don't add anything to the story, depending on the game. But anyway, let's get out of here. He takes out his sword. And he goes, all right, this first guard, you're going to have to get, he's so thirsty. So we're going to have to kill him or give him some kind of drink.
Wait, don't kill him. I have a Gatorade. I've had it with me all day, so I don't know how refreshing it'll be, but it is liquid.
A warm Gatorade. Great for the vocal cords. Yes. Not as refreshing, though.
Yeah.
The guard says, hey, you kids. Sorry, I'm so thirsty.
Oh, hey, you know what? That's funny, because I'm not at all. And here I've got this silly little extra Gatorade that I was just gonna not use. Would you want it?
Sure. Takes it, drinks it. And he says, let me just call my friends and tell them to let you through. Hey, if you see these two kids, let them through. And Butthole says, onward! And,
meanwhile,
this is taking
at all the other guard stations, Gatorade just comes out of the phone.
Yeah, it's like... All right, you go out of the guard station, and it looks like you're free, clear sailing, but you find yourself being, chased by the warden.
No.
And Mr. Sir and Dr. Pandansky. So roll a dexterity.
Oh, I'm fucked. That's a d20.
Oh, yeah. I forgot you gave away your Gatorade.
The roll was a 2.
-3, so a -1. You fall immediately on your face. Now, Butthole says, I'm leaving without you. It keeps running. And the warden catches you and she says, did you find any treasure?
And I'm like, what?
And then she goes, oh, you know what? Actually, how old are you?
And I say, 33?
Oh.
My birthday was just a couple weeks ago.
You're not supposed to be here.
Why?
This is for kids.
So wait, where am I supposed to be?
Jail! And then we cut to a scene where the bars come down on you. And you're stuck in jail now.
Oh, no. They would have confiscated everything on my person, including my 1,500 gold, 8 calories, and the wrapper, presumably, of a granola bar, and my master ball with my dear, beloved friend, Helotery, inside.
Well, we'll see what happens next time, because...
Oh, shit. We're starting the next one in jail, and the next one's going to be about, like... Fucking watermelon or something. Whatever also topic we come up with at the
CNN
last
CNN is playing on the news outside of your jail cell because the guard is watching it. And you see that the goblins have gone from the Maldives further into the stretches of whatever country is near the Maldives. I can't remember where they are. I think it's India. Okay, goblins are taking over India. Whether or not they're close to the Maldives, goblins are now taking over India.
I see. So that's like the sort of post-credit scene that the goblins are really gearing up to be kind of the big bad.
Yeah, you never know. But anyways, that's the end of it. It ended differently than I planned it to because I realized we're running so long.
Yeah, we are.
So let's finish up.
So did you ever at any point have some kind of additional affinity to this book / movie being from the desert in Texas?
I didn't even remember that it was a Texas movie until I watched it this time around, so I guess not.
Green Lake, Texas is a real place, but it's kind of down by the Gulf.
It's not near me.
Yeah.
It is, in fact, I don't know if it's actually a deserty area because it is on the coast.
Yeah, right.
I doubt it's very deserty. Not like where I'm from, which is very plains, high plains, yeah, desert right. stuff. but yeah, I don't know. I've never been to Green Lake. It's very far away from where I'm from. I wonder how long it would take to drive to Green Lake from Canyon, Texas. Probably, I'm gonna guess 10 hours.
Wow.
Because Texas is huge.
Yeah.
Green Lake, Texas. All right. Directions. Oh, I was right on the money. 9 hours and 48 minutes.
Wow.
That's crazy. Texas is so big. Anyway, we're going really long here. Do we have any other Star... I mean, I think we said some stuff about Star Wars. Whether or not it's directly related to this movie or not is another question.
Family, desert.
Family, desert. Like,
curse, destiny. Yeah.
Yeah, all that stuff. I feel like it's a little higher than your standard fare of what we normally do.
Yeah, you
but
mean
not
higher
too
score?
Much higher. Higher score, yeah.
Yeah, it's like a
not
Disney
too much higher.
Story.
Disney. A little bit of a hero's journey, kind of.
Auteur-ish.
Yeah.
Like, in that, like, the book writer also was the film writer.
Totally, totally, totally.
Colorful cast of characters.
Colorful cast of characters.
Sigourney Weaver is... It has Star Wars in her, even though Alien is not Star Wars, but Alien came out in 79 and was just like right on the heels of the sort of space fantasy / sci-fi of it all.
Yeah,
so
totally.
She kind of gets honorary Star Wars points for me.
I feel
Alien
that. I
and
feel
Avatar
that.
Both, you know, like those are both very Star Warsy things.
Very Star Warsy things, for sure.
I would imagine someone in this cast has done, at the very least, a voice on the Clone Wars or something. I can't think if there is any actors in common.
Yeah. I can't either. I don't know for sure. Is John Voight in Star Wars?
I don't... No, no.
No, he's not.
But, it's... The best of Star Wars will sometimes kind of hold up a mirror to society.
Sure.
Or not even necessarily the best, but the most interesting, and otherwise it is a fairy tale.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
And this is kind of both.
Yeah.
In a similar way. It's a bit more of real in turn. It's funny. It's so unreal in its own little smallness and singular aesthetic, but it is more set in the real world than Star Wars, obviously.
Totally.
Music bangers. There's that song that Caitlin just did.
Oh, the soundtrack is also really cool and good.
Yeah. It's very 2003.
It's so 2003, but it works.
Disney.
Disney. Disney, Disney, Disney.
But it's not a Disney thing. They just produce the thing. So just like Star Wars, it's this is a thing that already existed and we'll just make the movie.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Sweet Feet. That's in both.
I'm sorry, you made a Sweet Feet joke, but I was just seeing that the film was dedicated to somebody. I was trying to figure out who it was, but anyway. Oh, sorry.
Oh,
go ahead.
We should look at who did the CGI.
Oh. Was it ILM? What a great soundtrack. Roger Ebert gave it 3.5 out of 4 stars and said very similar stuff to what we're saying. Are you finding the effects for this
one?
Yeah,
I'm looking at, like, I don't know why I'm not just on, like, IMDb, because it's all the individual credits as opposed to, like, any company name.
Sure. Flash Filmworks.
Ah, okay, there you go. Well, that was boring. The visual effects are very 2003, and so are the ones in Star Wars. The ones in Star Wars at the time looked better than the ones here because they had, what would you say, $17 million for this?
Yeah,
Wars movies were in the 100s, I think.
Yeah.
The prequels, that is. Gosh, what else am I missing? The sort of social commentary of it all makes me
think... Oh, yeah,
that's
not very Star Wars.
Like, yeah, that's not very Star Wars.
The race relations of it all, not very Star Wars.
Yeah, but the, like, desert family fate destiny singular voice... Very Star Wars, yeah. Banging
it's like
music.
up and down. I think I'm ready to give it a rating. We got to get out of here. It's so
Andor
late.
Has a like work prison
That's
labor
true.
Thing.
Yes, Andor. Very Andor this one. It's very Andor. It's not very Star Wars. It's very Andor.
Madame Zeroni has kind of a like Night Sisters vibe.
Sure.
The Old West town, everything in Star Wars is the Old West.
That's true.
Yeah, I
think it's a little higher.
I'm good about this getting a non-2.
Yes, I was thinking the exact same thing.
Yeah.
I think for my unit of measure, I'm going to do fermented cans of peaches.
Nice. I'm going to do linear feet.
Great. I'm going to say it's... I want to say like 3.5.
Okay. I'm going to say 5. 5
Dang!
Feet deep, 5 feet around.
Did you just do that for the whole reference? Okay, fine. It's our show. We can do whatever we want.
Yeah.
All right. 3.5 and 5. That might be our biggest difference in a rating that we've given in a long time. Yeah. But I like it.
I'm all feeling right, like maybe the year 2024, we start giving more shit like... Fours and fives and sixes.
Yeah, why not? Also, guess what? We're in our sixth season of this show now.
When we got that tweet shout out that it was our 5-year anniversary, I was like, from when? From when Josiah and I met?
Yeah.
From right? When I graduated college? What are you talking about, 5 years?
Yeah, what are you talking about? So we started the podcast, episode 1 premiere. So we did a little house visit trailer and a welcome episode that was 3 minutes long.
Yeah.
And then episode 1 premiered on March 4th, 2019, which it is a day after.
That's right.
While we're recording this, a day after that. So
yeah.
We are now solidly in season 6 because 2019 was season 1, 2020 was season 2, 2021 was season 3, 2022 was season 4, 2023 was season 5, 2024 will be season 6 as I designate them when we upload them. So we are solidly.
And then at the end of season 6, we do a movie.
Exactly. I was going to say, it's time to make a movie.
Yeah.
Let's start thinking about it. We got to make a movie now. But anyways, do you want us on the internet? Because if you do, you can find us at How Star Wars is on Twitter and Instagram. You can email us at agoodpodcast@gmail.com because that's what this is. Mm-hmm. We got a great email from a listener recently asking about Mike's prediction at the end of the Too Fast, Too Furious episode. And
wait, did I make a prediction in the Too Fast, Too Furious one? Was that when I said we weren't going to talk about the...
Yes, I think so.
No, I thought that was...
Was that a different episode? Our listener might have mixed up the two, or I might have mixed them up, but I responded and said, yes, you did actually do that, but I can't remember which episode it was about now.
Because I did end up revealing what the prediction was.
No, the prediction was during the Chicago band, the Chicago album episode.
Yes, that's right. Because I remember thinking, like, during the days I was listening to it, like, I have nothing to say about this.
I gotta email this guy back now. Okay. But anyways, email us. We love getting emails. Everything else is from TikTok, but we did email, so that's great. And then, Mike, tell them about the Patreon. Well, only if you want to.
I do want to.
Okay, good.
We have a Patreon where if you would like to support our show, that's the best way you can do it. And in return, you get a weekly bonus episode every week, which is what weekly means. But I just want to make sure I say Not only is it weekly, it's every week.
Yeah.
And in said weekly bonus episode, it's usually about a half hour, and we talk about whatever's going on at the time. Sometimes we do an RPG, or we do improv, or we have a whole back catalog of all those episodes, plus film commentaries for all the Star Wars movies, for The Matrix, for Ocean's 11, for Scooby-Doo on Zombie Island, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And we have a Discord server, and let's see, what else is on the Patreon? I guess that's kind of everything, but it's 100 and something episodes, right? Like,
yeah. Oh, we're like 150 now. It's crazy.
And that's only $5 a month over at patreon.com/howstarwars is it. So in this, the year of giving, I don't know, is it the year of giving?
Sure, why not?
Let's call this the year of giving. We're going to say that right now. 2024 is the year of giving. And in this, the year of giving, why wouldn't you consider giving to the show How Star Wars Is It by way of their Patreon? Because look, we got a bunch of stuff there. It's not just you giving us a friggin' handout.
Yeah, come on. We'll give you some stuff back. But anyways, that's everything. So... Sailors of Star Wars, it's about time to be bye-bye. It's like we always say.
We love you. And may the fourth be with you.
Bye-bye. Bye.
Dig it all, dig it.
Dig it. Dig it all. Like the coolest song, the coolest guys singing the coolest song.
The coolest guys.
They're so cool.
Dude, X-Ray is like so cool.
So cool.
Looking.
And he's got specs on.
Yeah.
X-ray specs.